You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Our story of compassion in India actually begins in 1951. Everett Swanson was on a six-month evangelistic crusade, and he had a stop in India.
That's a clip from a video titled From Darkness to Light, The History of Compassion International in India. Compassion International, this multinational charity that deals mostly with the conditions of children in poverty, operates in 26 countries. They serve about 1.7 million children worldwide, maybe 25 countries from now on, or at least for the foreseeable future. Compassion International has found it more difficult to operate there than they would like, and they are shutting down operations in that largest of democracies on the planet. The New York Times ran a story about it, left some questions unanswered, some really big questions unanswered, but it might not be the New York Times' fault. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, March the 10th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk with Terry Mattingly, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, about this New York Times story on this Christian charity closing operations in India. After that, Dr. Alvin Schmidt joins us for part six of our series on Lutheran identity. We'll talk about the sacrament of the altar, that is the Lord's Supper. Pastor Chris Roseborough joins us for This Week in Pop American Christianity. Today, we're going to talk about the theology of William Paul Young, who is the author of the book The Shack, of course, the film version of The Shack was released this last week. We'll see what kind of theology lurks behind a Father, Son, and Holy Spirit that is comprised of two women and a man. And then it's Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We got four sound bites to play for you on this Friday afternoon. We're going to play them for you after you've listened to them. All you need to do is give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Or you can send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Our Facebook fan page, if you'd like to vote in advance for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, all you got to do is go to facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about a New York Times story about a Christian charity, Compassion International, closing operations in India, Terry Mattingly. He's a regular guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Can you tell from reading the New York Times story what Compassion International has actually been accused of in India?
You really can't if you read these stories, but I'm not totally sure that that's the New York Times' fault, which I think takes a little bit of unpacking. At this point, because there's so many different variations on the accusations, and these variations, I can't tell if they're from the Times or if they're from officials in India. It is very clear that there are official voices in India that don't want to talk about this story. And this puts a reporter in a bad position in that you don't have a definitive answer to your question. So you have to keep chasing the question around, and then often you get different answers. If you look at New York Times coverage of this story, you basically find different references. You find that Compassion International has been accused of converting people or helping people convert to Christianity. Then there's another reference in a Los Angeles Times story that says that they're accused of secretly converting people to Christianity. Then you have accusations everywhere that they have paid for conversions. And the kind of image that's called to mind there is the old phrase "Rice Christians," which was levied against missionaries in China, India, and elsewhere in Asia. And what this essentially means is if you convert to Christianity, we'll give you money for food, housing, medical care, school tuition, whatever, but we'll only give you this aid once you've converted. Now, that's what's called to mind with this language you see in the stories about them being accused of paying to convert. Yet later in the main New York Times stories, there's another reference where they're simply accused of holding religious activities, or perhaps even activities in which religious issues are discussed, which doesn't strike me as that unusual if we're talking about vacation Bible schools, you know, that there might be some discussion of religion during vacation Bible schools. Yet it's clear in the story that Compassion's position is that in the context of India, they have no discrimination based on who gets aid and who doesn't. And the Times even quotes a statistic that basically 75-78% of recipients of Compassion International aid in India are Hindus or members of other religions, and that then the rest are Christian children who are receiving aid. So out of all of that, like I said, I'm not sure exactly what Compassion has been accused of, and I'm not sure the Times is sure either. And part three, I'm not sure we can blame the Times for that, although it's possible the Times didn't ask some of the right questions, which is what I get into in my post, my original post on this topic at Get Religion.
Can you tell from reading the New York Times story whether or not evangelism is illegal in India?
No, it seems they didn't ask that question, and I don't know how India would answer it. And see, even there, you get into a further distinction that I raise in my piece, which is it possible that it's illegal in India for foreign-funded organizations to do evangelistic activities that lead to conversion? Although we don't know that that's the case. It's never definitively stated. We also don't know if actual Christian groups in India, of which there, of course, is a long history of Christianity in India, you know, including accounts of, you know, of the Apostle Thomas, I believe it was, making it all the way to India. So would it be illegal for Christians in native Indian churches to do evangelism and convert other people? That's another distinction. This is a very complex subject, and the Times, to its credit, devoted a lot of ink and attention to it. And in fact, they've already published now a follow-up as this debate continues, because the BJP government in India has attacked the Times story that came out that I wrote about, that came out 2 days ago.
Is it clear from the Times story that the context of this, and you kind of got into that territory just a second ago, the context of this is not just a religious one in India. It is, by the current government, for lack of a better word, a nationalistic question, isn't it?
Yes. In fact, when you talk about activities that are against India or activities that are harmful to India, which is what a lot of foreign groups are being accused of, someone just sent me another article, which I hope to deal with soon, in which it noted that there is an organization that advocates on behalf of the unclean, of the Dalits, the lowest possible class in the Hindu caste system. And this is a Unitarian-funded group. Now, you know, no matter what Garrison Keillor might have to say about Unitarian evangelism through interpretive dance, you know, among the Native Americans in the Midwest, which is one of many Unitarian jokes I could make. But most of those jokes focus on the fact that the Unitarians are the last people in the world that would be doing evangelism. What's clear there is they're doing legal activities on behalf of the weakest and the most undefended people in India, which in some parts of the country there is evidence that they still face overwhelming prejudice and discrimination. So if that's an attack on India, and evangelism is an attack on India because it undercuts the current party's emphasis that to be Indian is by its very nature to be Hindu, that there is a, you know, an ironclad connection between Hinduness and being a citizen of India in the view of the current majority party, then obviously we're not talking about religious activities here. We're talking about activities on behalf of freedom of conscience, and some activities just essentially on basic human rights.
Well, speaking of human rights, when we come back with Terry Mattingly, we'll talk about the Universal Declaration on Human Rights and where it may come into play on the issue of this Christian charity, Compassion International, closing its operations in India and the New York Times coverage of it. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Mark your calendars for the 4th annual Metro East Home and Garden Show, Saturday and Sunday, March 18th and 19th at and to benefit Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, featuring over 50 exhibitors, including many new vendors, as well as recycling and shredding services on site. On Saturday, join home and garden experts Rich Orris of Mosby Building Arts and Tony Frisella of Frisella's Nursery, along with Metro East alum and talk show host Annie Fry, as well as radio personalities Julie Tristan and Billy Greenwood, meeting and greeting with show visitors. And don't forget, Fred Bird appears both days. Sunday is Family Safety Day, provided by Glennon Safety Kids Program and Sports Care Team. Pet adoption services on site. Visitors can register to win a $500 voucher for pet grooming services, compliments of Tina's Pet Grooming in Edwardsville, Illinois. Check them out on Facebook. The Metro East Home and Garden Show is sponsored by the Bank of Edwardsville, Riverbender, and EdGlennToday.com. Free admission and parking. Learn more at MEHGS.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery dice, un mundo secular tiene necesidad profunda de cristianos pensativos y racionales. Este mes, lea más de Dr. Montgomery y otros expertos de las ciencias y la teología por suscribir a The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's The Lutheran Witness. Visite acph.org/trylutheranwitness para una oferta especial, 6 revistas mensuales por $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpretando a un mundo contemporáneo desde una perspectiva luterana.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about the New York Times story regarding a Christian charity, Compassion International, closing operations in India. Terry Mattingly is our guest, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. He's also going to be speaking at our Winter Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November the 10th and Saturday, November the 11th in Houston, Texas. He'll be speaking about making the case for news discernment. Joining him are Scott Murray, Mark and Molly Hemingway. We have Jennifer Roback Moore. She'll be addressing the sexual revolution and more, all at the Winter Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Houston, Texas. It is Friday, November the 10th and Saturday, November the 11th. You can register by going to our website, issuesetc.org, or give us a call, 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. It's the Winter Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Houston, Texas. Terry, let's talk about a document that probably your readers will be familiar with. Our listeners certainly are as well. The Universal Declaration on Human Rights. Where does it possibly come into play on the issue of Compassion International in India?
Well, it was something I felt that they should ask about in the sense that, back to your original question, is it illegal to do evangelism in India? Well, this gets us to the Article 18 section in the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which I find is a document that a lot of reporters simply don't know exists. We have quoted it a lot in context related to battles between minority faiths and Islam, and specifically related to blasphemy laws, such as in Pakistan. Article 18 of the Universal Declaration, I'll just read it here, it's only a few lines. Everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes freedom to change his religion or belief, and freedom, either alone or in community with others and in public or private, to manifest his religion and belief in teaching, practice, worship, and observance. Note the phrase, freedom to change his religion or belief, which is fairly clear language to the right to convert, you know, from one faith to another. But see, even there, you get into complications on the ground. There are parts of the world where it is not illegal to convert from one faith to another. However, even though it's not illegal, there is a tendency for public officials on the ground to not defend the rights of converts, or even to investigate it when those converts are beaten or killed. The cases just tend to kind of vanish. In other words, it's not illegal, but it's functionally not illegal to kill or attack a convert from one faith to another, depending on the context. So many questions that can be raised about this New York Times article. What I felt at the end of it was that the Times never clarified the essential point. Is it illegal to convert from one faith to another in India? Is it illegal for an organization to sponsor activities in which people may convert? And notice that there's a difference here. I hope this isn't too confusing. There's a difference between paying for an activity in which someone is forced to convert in order to receive benefits, the Rice Christian thing. There's a difference between that and paying for an activity, such as, say, a vacation Bible school, in which children come and play games and have snacks and study this, that, or the other, and exposed to Bible studies. And in that context, of their own free will, a child and or his or her parents may end up converting to Christianity. The second scenario is not the same scenario as the first. And we can't tell what compassion's being accused of. Now, is that the fault of the government or the Times? I don't know, but it would have been good if the Times had actually stated, dedicated a paragraph to a simple statement, in modern India, the status of evangelism and conversion is such and such. Or, even if you have to state, under the current ruling government, it is unclear whether the government believes it's fair, that it's legal for someone to change their faith, or to encourage someone to voluntarily change their faith through evangelism. I'm not sure that the Times thought about doing that because maybe they thought that it's just bad to convert people, period. In other words, if converting people from one faith to another is something that conservative Christians do, is that by its very nature now presumed to be bad? The story does not say that, but I'm saying that at the end I was wondering, you know, from the viewpoint of the editors of the Times, why not pursue this question? Why not raise the issue that under one of the liberal hallmarks of the modern world, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, a classic statement of what used to be called liberalism, why not note that they have the human right to convert? Now, India is a powerful part of the UN. Does India still recognize the Universal Declaration of Human Rights? There's lots of questions here.
So giving the New York Times the benefit of the doubt, and you've started down that road already, what is a reporter to do? He could, as you said, include those paragraphs that may say, well, to this reporter's mind so far, it's just unclear, or, you know, we don't know. What does he do next? Who does he talk to if you can't talk to Indian authorities who will be frank with you? Is the characterizations from members of Compassion International enough?
Well, there's the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, which annually releases a report. Now, if I had a few more seconds here, I imagine with a quick Google search, I could call that up, and it might contain information on this precise point. There are human rights groups that continue to defend the old liberalism. And when I say the old liberalism, what I mean there is the Universal Declaration. I'll bet somewhere there are people who know the current status of Indian law and are willing to discuss it. Now, it's possible that Compassion International officials were not anxious to discuss this for the reason of the safety of their personnel in India, or because they still hold out hope of somehow getting this reversed. There's another interesting reference that I have to admit I don't know the details of. The New York Times article makes a reference that Indian officials said that they gave Compassion International the right to switch their status from being a charity group, since that is what they do primarily, and notice their charity then goes to anyone who wants it, which brings up the issue of working with non-Christians. They were offered a chance to switch their status to being a religious group under Indian law. Now, what I suspect is that by switching from a charity to a religious group, perhaps there's language in there that religious groups can only work with their own members, or that their public activities and donations and use of foreign funds to help Muslims, Hindus, and members of other faiths, are they somewhat limited when they go from being a charity to being a religious organization? I don't know. But the Times story clearly did not explain what that meant to make that switch and why Compassion doesn't want to do it. If that's the case, I mean, you can't address anything, everything, I should say, even in a story as long as this New York Times piece. They got tons of material in there. But reporters should definitely, in their follow-up work, should be chasing this question of what's the difference between a charity and a religious group. Was Compassion International offered this exchange, and why didn't they take it? I think I can predict why, like I said, but we need to verify that. This is a very important case, by the way, because India just has hundreds, but maybe thousands of different NGOs working that are affected by this. I mean, there are hardly any religious organizations that do charity work, aid for the poor, health care, you name it. Very few groups in this world that are active on a global level don't have representatives in India. I mean, India is, what, the largest democracy in the world? The population is massive. This is a very big issue, and I really hope the Times continues to chase it.
Well, with that said, with about 30 seconds, is maybe a fruitful path forward in that chasing of the story to contact as many of those other NGOs as possible and say, how do you see this situation?
Yeah, I think that they're probably doing that on the ground in India, because that's fairly obvious. If I were on the story myself at this point, I think I would also chase, to the same degree, I would be going after human rights experts and religious liberty experts and trying to get a story that nails down what is India law, what are people on the ground there saying is the status of Indian law. Like I said before, you can have a law that's on the book, but it doesn't help you to know that you're right if you're also dead, or in jail, or your family is threatened. In other words, what is the reality on the ground right now about religious liberty in India? Who's being affected? And with its long history of missionary work, have we reached a stage where it's now illegal to be a missionary in India, or too dangerous to remain there and do that work? I would get with the the U.S. Commission on Religious Freedom, International Religious Freedom, and other experts at Georgetown and Baylor and the Hudson Institute. There are all kinds of sources that you could go to for information on this right now and nail that part down.
Terry Mattingly is a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He is founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here again.
Folks, Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, is brought to you in part today by Concordia University, Wisconsin Online. They offer 50 online educational options for an associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree, and they'll waive your application fee when you enter the promo code ISSUES. Find out more by clicking the Concordia University, Wisconsin logo at issuesetc.org. Lifelong Lutheran Learning, Concordia University, Wisconsin Online. When we come back, it's part six of our series on Lutheran identity with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity. We'll talk about the sacrament of the altar.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
I'm Pastor Todd Rappey. I serve a congregation here in Fayetteville, North Carolina, Our Redeemer Lutheran Church, a sister congregation of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. All of the saints here gather around blood, water, and spirit as theologians of the cross every Sunday morning at 10:30. We only welcome sinners. We certainly would welcome you. If you'd like to contact us through our website, you may do so at faylcms.org.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as Confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the clcc.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a Confessional Lutheran. The clcc.org.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Westminster, Massachusetts. Redeemer Lutheran, Fairhope, Alabama. St. Matthew Lutheran, Stony Plain, Alberta, Canada. Holy Cross Lutheran, Moline, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Munster, Indiana. St. John Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. Calvary Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Reformation Lutheran, Afton, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Lima, Ohio. Risen Lord Lutheran, Taylorsville, Kentucky, Prince of Peace Lutheran, Crystal Lake, Illinois, and Trinity Lutheran, Elmore, Ohio. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes a congregational sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.